Constitution.
Gentlemen, what I would like to do now, and you can, I like this bill.
I have one here if I didn't like it. Mr. Larson is a constituent of mine, and I have a long...
Probably doesn't know the personal relationship. My father used to work for that station at one time back in the...
KPTV Channel 12 is the station you're looking for.
Mr. Chair, just point of order. Which bill do you like? The original or the amended? Wanted to clarify that for the record.
And I would like to see the work of, what I would like to do is get two more witnesses on, and we're running short, and I'm assuming that two more witnesses on. Call our witness on 2479. I have one witness on 2479 who's been waiting here all day, and it's on behalf of the governor, although I just sent a note down saying, please find Janice Yaden for me, and I got a note back.
I want to correct a snide remark whispered in my ear by Representative Bohm moments ago. Now I know, Courtney, why you get such good press. As late as yesterday, Channel 12 informed me the reason they had not included me in some of their stories was for fear that they would be seen as favoring me. So, Representative Bohm, that vicious remark was very uncalled for, and I'm deeply hurt to my quick.
President,
I'm sorry to get carried away, but I just, that was terrible what he said to me.
Party shot, Mr. Larson.
I'm just, where are we right now?
Take care of it. Trust us.
I'm going to come back to this in work session this today. If I want work session today, I'll work session the next possible time. I think we have, kind of consensus here on the bill, and I think we're talking about details. Clark, am I wrong?
Well, no, and as you know, I'm not a member of the sub-panel, but I do a lot of adoption work. The more I sit and think about this, the more the questions come up, and would it be your intent to be able to get into records that are otherwise sealed by the court?
No.
Okay.
No. Only to have available those records that we all thought we were available up to this point.
They are not here to fight that battle today. They just want what they ordinarily would get. Mm-hmm. And what they ordinarily get them. So what ordinarily would not give you some of
the facts? Mr. Chair?
Ms. Duker.
Perhaps I could get together with Representative Mannix and Clark and address their concerns and anyone else's, and then... Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
I mean, this is a significant measure, and I generally favor it. And the reason why I threw out those questions is these are just concerns. I mean, this is a first impression. Normally, we would hold a work session the same day. I'm interested in allowing these gentlemen opportunity to perhaps send a supplemental letter to us just saying, look, here are some reasons why even legislative proceedings should be included. Just addressing those, and I'm just sending up a little yellow flag, Mr. Chairman, that those of us who favor this want to make sure that it's done right and that concerns such as Representative Clark's are covered. And I think they're covered, but I want to be real cautious about that.
Exactly. That's all I intended to do. I think if you were to ask most judges, they think that all the things they take into evidence in court is now open under the records law. I don't think most of them know that the records law doesn't actually cover the stuff in court that we all think is public.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back to this. I have the gentleman from the City of Eugene and Mr. Linden from the court system. Why don't you both come up for some quick testimony? I'm really got to push. Mr. Mann from the City of Eugene.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Vic Mann. I'm with the City of Eugene Department of Public Safety, and I happen to be a police lieutenant. I would like to just address the issue of actual costs, since there's been a representation about that. And the language that says that we shall provide copies without charge or a substantially reduced fee concerns me a great deal. As Mr. Larson referred to, he said there are a number of incidents where public agencies provide free copies. Having been a media point on the University of Oregon Otson sniper incident and a teacher strike, there are some times when we have no option. Basically, we have to provide the information because it's in everybody's best interest, but it is at a cost, and we eat those actual costs. The problem with this bill is it opens up everything.
Well,
determines that the waiver reductions...
Yes, but it also opens it up to authors, scholars, and those costs, we have a policy of we charge for actual costs, and we have a set fee, and we don't make exceptions for attorneys, we don't make exceptions for anybody, and I don't...
Man, you're waving that before this committee is not exactly the way...
Yeah, I just say that is an actual cost to us, and we feel that strongly about it, that it is a point of contention, and I would agree with the language if it said may, I think is the point, and I think that there should be language that considers actual costs for agencies to be open to this type of copying costs.
We'll take that in consideration when we get back work session. Thank you.
If you need any figures, we'll be happy to provide our standard fees.
Shooting from the hip. Didn't even know this thing was happening.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. You're correct. This is all very new. There are three things that I would like to have time to talk to the sponsors about. First of all, I'm concerned that we make it very clear in this that those court records that are not presently disclosed, juvenile adoption, et cetera, are very clearly identified as being not affected by this measure. Secondly, on page 2, line 5, the definition of custodian, I want to take a quick look at. The great, great majority of the court records are maintained and held in custody by the trial court administrator or clerk. There are some records that may be the judge's notes of a case or things of that nature that we could possibly define custodian better so that we don't get into arguments with that. And then my point on line 17 that talks about the without charge or substantially reduced fee, I would just suggest that the subcommittee give some consideration to making a distinction between commercial enterprises and indigent persons or not-for-profit organizations or academicians. It's not unusual, particularly in Lane County with the University of Oregon, for us to get records requests from students and professors and people conducting academic research. And unless they're totally unreasonable, we do everything we can to give them access to those records, and we don't throw up barriers for them. I know that from my time as a trial court administrator in Eugene, we used to provide some free records to clearly indigent persons if they involve cases in which they were litigant. You know, if they're indigent, there's no other way for them to get that record. We don't want to hold it back for them. Not-for-profit organizations are another thing, but commercial enterprises of whatever nature, they're in the business of making money, and I don't think the public ought to be subsidizing them by providing records to them at a lower cost than we do to your average Joe off the street.
Let me ask you the crucial question in regard to your particular position, and that is, primary thrust of the bill, and that is including courts aside from the confidential records, but including courts in the public records law.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to take issue with that. I think most of our courts operate as though they were, except for one or two instances, our courts operate as though they're covered by the public records law.
My impression too.
And the appellate court decisions in this area have extended access to news organizations on a relatively open basis. I think that is the way we operate, and this really isn't going to have too much of an operational effect.
Quick question. Are we likely to find that an agency could say what their costs were?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Calori, the cost of providing free documentation?
I was thinking more of the other way. Is it likely that if we said provided at cost, that they would know what their cost was?
Oh, at cost.
On a document, especially on a document-by-document basis.
Of course, I'm always suspicious of the term cost, because pretty soon you know you've got 1% of his salary in there for administering.
Oh, that's right.
I know that, for example, copies of court records are assessed a charge of 25 cents, and the actual cost of running it through the machine is about 6 or 7 cents. The cost, though, of pulling it out of the file, putting it in the machine, taking it out of the machine, mailing it to the person, et cetera, can add up.
Okay.
I think that you could try and define what the actual cost is, but you have to have some of those overhead factors in there.
Well, I think so, too. I was just asking, are they equipped to do that? Are they, you know, would they be likely to say, if you do it on the basis, if we're required to do it on the basis of what our actual costs are, would they, in most cases, would they be able to answer that question?
They ought to be able to.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Linden. Why don't we close the hearing on House Bill 2571. Move to House Bill 2479, Ms. Yates.
Members of the committee, my name is Janice Yaden, Assistant to the Governor for Human Resources. I'm here in support of House Bill 2479, which simply raises the fines for the possession and delivery of less than 5 grams of marijuana. The governor believes it is time to stop pretending that the use of marijuana, even a small use, is not a serious matter. We believe that House Bill 2479 says this. It establishes a minimum and increases the maximum fines fivefold for the possession and delivery of small amounts of marijuana. What it says is that Oregon's message is that just because it is not a crime to possess small amounts of marijuana, it is still not okay. It sends a distinct message that using marijuana is very serious, and if you do it, you will pay for it. In the process, I might add, we have asked that the money that we would expect to see from this increased fine would go towards the prevention and the treatment of program treatment for adolescents who are involved in alcohol and drug abuse. I don't know, Mr. Chairman, if you have in front of you an amendment which was actually sent to Holly Robinson, but I believe it was sent to on down to this subcommittee, which asks that we add treatment to the classification under where the increased fine would be sent. That was
what was the heading on that amendment?
Well, it was just a letter to Holly Robinson.
It hasn't been distributed yet.
And
unless someone else has received a copy.
Maybe I could just give you, I just brought a couple of copies because I thought that it had been sent down. We had intended to write it in our bill to say that the monies shall be used for the development and implementation of adolescent alcohol and drug abuse prevention and treatment activities. We wanted to have treatment in there particularly, not just prevention. And there were a couple of reasons for that, as I wrote in this letter. One is that we have a really long list, and you've heard this in some of your other committees, we have a long waiting list for alcohol and drug treatment in the state of Oregon, particularly for adolescents. We also know that a lot of our funds come through federal dollars, and we don't know from time to time, year to year, how many funds we're going to have for treatment programs. And that's why we wanted this to be both treatment and prevention activities. So we ask that you make that amendment to this bill.
I appreciate that. We'll need to check on whether or not we received it. I think to be doubly sure, perhaps you could submit another copy of that amendment.
Certainly.
Council has received it, so
good.
We're all right there.
Thank you.
Any questions from the members of the committee?
Are you familiar with the other bills out there that are pending on the same issue?
To my knowledge, the other bills recriminalize the use of marijuana. Is that correct? Is that what all of the other bills do?
Well, various ways. Various degrees, but
yes,
right.
That's as much as I know about them.
What's your position on that, those bills?
Well, I guess if you could recriminalize marijuana without any kind of attorneys involved, maybe you would not have any impact upon your indigent defense. And if you had enough prison beds, perhaps it might make some sense to look at that. But I'm not sure if that's a very productive way, given the situation in Oregon, where we don't have very many prison beds. And I assume everybody would have to have an attorney. Is that correct?
If you've got an imprisonment as a sanction, you would have to have an indigent defense provider.
If the possession became a crime, you would have to have an indigent defense attorney appointed.
If imprisonment's included, it's by definition going to be a crime, a misdemeanor or a felony, as I understand it.
Just one, can I follow up? How do you expect to get a message across to people that the users that fuel the drug situation if we're treating it like a traffic ticket? What kind of message are we sending? Now, $500 is, I can kill an elk in Northeast Oregon and get fined $500 out of season.
Well, I guess my thought was that if you don't have capacity to incarcerate individuals and you don't have the money to provide them defense, that this would be another way of being able to get someone's attention. To me, if someone asked me to pay a $250 fine versus a $50 fine, that gets my attention real fast.
Well, I
feel the same way if I were killing a deer out of season, too. If it were a $250 fine, it would get my attention real fast.
Yeah, but remember that killing deer out of season isn't destroying the fabric of our society, and I just,
No, I agree. I
think it's a joke is what I'm trying to say, that we decriminalize marijuana and expect to stop drug houses. We're going to have to pay the price in society to build necessary prisons if we want to continue to say you can use an ounce, and all we're going to do is give you a $500 fine, maximum. Might be a 50 when the first time. The judge might give him 25. So I appreciate your arguments, but, the tail's wagging the dog if your argument's true, is we're not going to do anything about the drug problem because we're not going to deal with the low-level users. They can pay their fine and walk. The message is inconsistent to me.
Other questions, Representative Bowen?
No.
Further testimony?
I have with me Jeff Kushner from the Alcohol and Drug Office who wanted to speak to this bill also.
Mr. Kushner?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I am Jeff Kushner, for the record, Director of the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs. Before I get into my prepared testimony, I think it was last week you held testimony on House Bill 2691, and there was testimony concerning compulsory treatment. That bill related to parents being mandated to treatment if their use was impacting their children. I brought a monograph that is just out from the National Institute on Drug Abuse on compulsory treatment, and I think if it gets reviewed, you'll see how effective compulsory treatment is and can be. I've ordered a copy for each of the committee members, and when I get that, I will distribute it to you, but this should clear up that issue. I am here to speak in favor of House Bill 2479 as well. The financial costs of drug abuse, alcohol and drug abuse in the state of Oregon annually, we estimated in 1985 conservatively to be over $1.5 billion, and that doesn't take into consideration the personal devastation caused by Oregon families. In case you are not aware of it, Oregon's young people do use illicit drugs more often and earlier than their counterparts at a national level, and I have included an attachment to my testimony, attachment number one, which I think clearly shows that data for four drugs, and those patterns are consistent among 11 drugs that are surveyed across this state and across the nation. There's only one state that I'm aware of where the drug use problem by adolescents is more severe and problematic than it is in this state, and that's in the state of Alaska, where, as you probably know, a Supreme Court interpretation of the Alaska Constitution allowed that small amounts of marijuana could be possessed legally.
Have you had copies of your written testimony distributed? Because I haven't received a copy up here.
I provided them to the clerk.
They just don't drop it off to the temporary chairman.
Everybody but the chairman.
What I'm going to encourage you to do is I'm going to first ask if anybody on this committee is opposed to the minimum increase that's proposed here in order to save a little bit of time. We've heard some debate about whether or not it should be stronger. The first question is whether or not it should be, is there anyone against moving it up to at least the level proposed in the bill. Because you may not have to preach to the converted on this point.
No sense preaching to the choir, that's for sure.
Hope you don't take offense at that.
No, sir. I'm interested in the bill getting out of committee. That's my sole purpose.
And I have received your testimony now. Thank you. Let me ask if members of the committee have any questions for Mr. Kushner. Very well. Thank you very much. Now, I understand that there is a time crunch this afternoon with Easter coming along and all of that. There are three other witnesses listed to testify on this bill. I have Terry Pyro and Esther Newman coming together, as I understand it. Now, counsel has advised me there's a couple of bills coming up for work session at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock. What I propose to do is let's move ahead with this testimony to wrap up the public hearing on this bill, but I'd like to encourage you to be as quick as possible. There'll be also Michael Goldrock and Roseanne Creighton recognize that it looks like the bill already has support for at least what's being done in the bill. Terry Pyro and Esther Newman, would you come forward, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Terry Pyro. I reside at 19 Falstaff, Lake Oswego.
And my name is Esther Newman, and I reside at 2820 Spring Boulevard in Eugene, and we're members of the Junior Leagues of Portland and Eugene. We serve on the Oregon State Public Affairs Committee, the League's Joint Legislative Advocacy Team, and we are here today on behalf of our organization and members to register support of House Bill 2479. The Junior Leagues of Eugene and Portland have a combined membership of over 2,000 women and a 75-year history of involvement in our communities. We are committed to improving our neighborhoods and our state through effective action and leadership by trained volunteers. We support programs and legislation which will benefit Oregon families, and most particularly the children in Oregon families. We believe House Bill 2479 strengthens Oregon's commitment to deter the use of marijuana while it provides the potential for putting much-needed resources to use and substance abuse prevention programs. Our interest in this bill lies not so much in the criminalization issues of marijuana, but in support of funding education, prevention, and treatment programs, especially for adolescents. We strongly believe that there has not been and can never be enough support given adolescent programs. For years, Junior League community projects have been directed at preventing child abuse and substance abuse, two issues often intertwined. Both leagues have given thousands of volunteer hours and considerable financial support to projects focused on preventing these problems.
Let me interrupt you for a moment and ask, then one of the focuses of your support is the fact that we're talking about using this funding in a proactive sense and not just putting it into the general fund.
Yes. Right. That's the thrust of our support.
Part of your support here, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
By the way, we do have the letter now from the governor's office in regard to the amendment. It was passed up to me, so we do have that line. I know that's only a couple of words to be added, and so it's a fairly simple amendment. I'm speaking back to the governor's representative. Go ahead. I just wanted to interrupt to sort of summarize that point.
That's right. In Lane County, the Junior League of Eugene began a drug education program in the schools in the late 70s. That project branched out into the refusal skills program, which emphasized teaching kids how to say no to drugs and alcohol. Currently, the Junior League of Eugene is supporting a community-wide prevention program for parents entitled Preparing for the Drug-Free Years, and we sponsor a woman-to-woman alcohol abuse prevention program directed towards college-aged women. We are also beginning a new media project aimed at changing the attitude towards drug abuse in Lane County and will join with city and county agencies to launch a massive multimedia campaign.
The Junior League of Portland has been involved in substance abuse prevention programs for some time. We have provided funds to Mainstream Youth Program, Oregon Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, Counseling Intervention Programs, the Free from Drug Abuse Program, 12-Step Haven, and Teens and Company, where teenagers out scenarios in an attempt to reach their peers on issues like substance abuse. Our volunteers and funds have aided Portland's West Women's and Children's Shelter, which has served, among others, women with alcohol and drug abuse problems. With passages of bills like House Bill 2479, our state acknowledges that alcohol and drug abuse is a big and growing problem. It affects every aspect of our state, including the economy, crime rate, family security, and most importantly, the future of our children. Our research indicates that marijuana...
I'm going to interrupt you. ask you to skip over the description of the effects of drug use, only because after about 2 months of hearing, we've heard a lot about that, and we're pretty well educated on that subject, which is why I also polled the committee genteelly a little while ago. I would like you to summarize some of your points about some of the things you would hope to see done with the money that's set aside through this bill. And that's already been touched on by our other witness here. Did you have some additional comments on that?
We also strongly support a proposed amendment for adding treatment programs. We feel that the effects of the use of drugs on our adolescents is a crisis to every family in Oregon and threatens the future of our children as well as our families. Because the treatment facilities and programs are inadequate for the number of children that we have abusing drugs, we feel that it's imperative that the treatment facilities be funded also.
And would the Junior League be in a position to cooperate with these programs and participate in these programs? Is that one of your intentions?
I think historically we have done that, and we have every intention at the time to continue to do so.
Yes. Many of the treatment programs are businesses, though, and the treatment is expensive, and there are many teens who cannot afford the treatment, families cannot afford the treatment. And so something addressing treatment on the basis of need would be supported.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions for the witnesses? I see none. Thank you again very much. Michael Goldrock?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's actually Goldrick, Michael Goldrick.
All right.
That's all right. I'm the clinical and administrative director of the Adolescent Recovery Program at Sacred Heart Hospital in Eugene. I come in support of House Bill 2479 today, mostly because I also support the funneling of funds raised by the enactment of such a law for continued education, prevention, and treatment programs offered by the state. I think more than anything, I wanted to, and I'm sorry, Representative Valma is still here. I was encouraged by the passion with which you directed your comments a minute ago about the tail wagging the dog, because I feel very much working with the most acutely affected families of adolescents who are chemically dependent. Very often, I feel as though I want to maximize penalties. I also understand the fiscal impact of recriminalizing possession. I think that those members of our United States Congress who came out in support of, or at least looking at the legalization of drugs across the board within the last year, have come to the understanding that not only our courts and our jails, but all of our social systems are straining under the impact of adolescent substance abuse and substance abuse in general. So while I have a tendency to want to support recriminalization, I also understand the other impact that it would have on our community, already stressed to such extent by the drug problem and the crime that is a result of the drug problem. More than anything, I would like to see more dollars that are collected from criminals spent toward prevention and education programs, and I think the state has done an awful lot in that regard, and I'd like to see them continue their efforts. We don't receive funding from the State Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs, but I would like to see them continue the good work that they're doing. And that's a summary of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this witness? Thank you for coming this afternoon. You. Did you have some materials that you wanted to leave with us?
No, actually, I do have a report, Mr. Chairman, that we published at the Adolescent Recovery Program at Sacred Heart Hospital, which talks about the high number of adolescents that come into treatment with marijuana being the primary drug of choice.
Be willing to leave that with us. It would be very helpful.
I would be willing to.
Or if you could send us a copy of that.
I can leave this. I'm sorry I don't have 17 copies for you, but I'll leave what I have.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Rosanna Creighton.
Good afternoon, Acting Chair Mannix and committee. As you know, I could tell you about marijuana. You've heard it. So I'm not going to, but I gave you some papers so that when you want to pull the file or you need to have backup material when you go on the floor, you can. I have just a few comments that haven't been made that I would like to make. This is identical to Senate Bill 463, which was introduced for Citizens for a Drug-Free Oregon. And for the record, my name is Rosanna Creighton, Executive Director. And Representative Baum, I want you to know I am speaking right now for House Bill 2479, but I am not against these other bills. I want to make a few comments about that. And you'll have to be patient because I have to skip through all of this. I have given you information about the background of Oregon's decrim law, and that might be interesting to you at another time. The marijuana industry in Oregon. One thing that needs to be noted is that it's reported that brokers now are running the outdoor grow operations in Northern California and Oregon. And these brokers subcontract, and the subcontractors hire local labor at about $200 a day or illegal aliens to run and take care of their cultivation activities on the national forest lands. These plants are worth about $3,500 a pound, and they yield anywhere from 1 to 2 pounds. This is information from the government.